You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. David Baer here. So I spent a lot of time working in marketing in my career, and it started out actually a job working on Broadway shows and then working in classical music. And then somehow I found my way in the wine industry. And these days I actually work with marketing agencies as my clients, but it all started in a place where I really didn't expect to end up where I am based on where I started. And I imagine that's true for a lot of professionals in the marketing world. I know it's true for today's guest. And in fact, we were just talking about this a moment ago, and this is why I brought it up, because it was fresh in my mind. Chris Rodriguez is joining me today. He these days works in the world of marketing on behalf of startups, particularly in the tech space, but it didn't start there. And so, Chris, first of all, welcome.
Thanks
second
for having
of all,
me.
Yeah, indeed. And second of all, I want to ask you if you wouldn't mind to sort of share a little bit about your background and the trajectory that led you to where you are today.
Absolutely. So to your point, my passion for marketing started way before tech startup marketing. My story starts in the mean streets of Brooklyn and Queens, New York City, where I found my way to become a music major at the University of Virginia. And my passion for that industry led to doing business and marketing in the music industry for many years, about a decade. And I cut my teeth there on all things related to community management, MySpace, event creation, event promotions, email newsletter blasts, and the like. And I realized that my passion for the process sometimes outweighed my passion for the very music and, with respect, musicians that I was marketing. And that was the epiphany that I needed. And so I found my way into tech startup marketing, in fact, as a 30-year-old rookie, hustling alongside the 21 and 22-year-olds, and, you know, was able to hang and was able to put enough of a strong effort out there where I found my way very quickly. And as I speak to you today, I now own a digital marketing agency that is focused on tech startup marketing, and, you know, very proud and humbled that that's the evolution of my path.
I love the story because of a point that was sort of embedded in there that I want to ask you about. Very often businesses will come to us and say, hey, I'd love to work with you. What experience do you have in my world? But I think that you've illustrated that there's something around the process and the activities and the idea of what we do as marketers in support of our clients that can be translate from one industry to another. And I wonder how, you know, at the age of, in your early 30s, you made that transition so effectively, had to probably be built on the fact that you had some solid foundations in place.
Yeah, I would say I pride myself on being industry agnostic. So you're touching on exactly that point. Every single product or service that is to be marketed has a target, period, end of sentence. The chase is in finding that target, where these people frequent, what words they use, what sites they visit. And I became passionate about that process, the methodology. There are certainly industries that I've experienced where people are passionate about that industry. One just anecdote would be, I spent some time in the politics and advocacy marketing space, and people are very passionate about the causes for or against. I found that my strength in that example was that I actually don't really care about politics. And therefore, I'm just looking to focus on the conversions, the traffic, and the ROI. And it allowed me to shine in an area where sometimes people can get a little too emotionally attached, in my opinion. So I just try to focus on the process, the methodology, the best practices, and not necessarily be too presumptive that I'm aware of the answer. The math in front of you is supposed to be the guide for your data-driven insights.
Okay, there's a lot there that we can circle back on. I want to start at the beginning of what you were laying out there, which is the idea that we all, as product or service or businesses, have a specific target, and that there's a lot of different ways to get in front of that. When we say target, we obviously mean the audience, the market that we're aiming to influence in one way or another. So I guess there's two questions that I want to ask here. What do most businesses do incorrectly that needs to be corrected? And what advice do you want to give them? And then how do you start acting on what you learn about the audience?
Sure. Well, I think it's difficult to say without getting specific information on a per company basis what that particular company is doing wrong, to be fair. What I believe is that people need to trust the process in a non-biased way. You have to be experimental. You have to try different approaches. What works for one may not work for another. And by different approaches, that can be different channels, right? Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, now called X, Google Organic Search. There may be one or several particular channels that works better for your brand than others. You need to have believed in the first place that you need to have a presence and try the approach to learn if it succeeds or fails. And then, as I like to say, in an emotionless way, react to the data and pivot if necessary, or double down if the data speaks to that. So if there's something that someone's doing wrong per se, and I realize I'm speaking in abstracts, but I think this holds, is if you're not going through that process and you have preconceived notions, then that's what you're doing wrong, is what I would say. And I just firmly believe that there's a right answer for every website. There are right keywords that someone can research. You need to know what those are and understand if you are looking to do the scrappy, free, organic version of that tactic. So let's say search, and you're creating content for search or optimizing your YouTube videos for search, versus if you have a budget and you can put the gasoline on the engine, as I like to say, and accelerate speed and learning through paid advertising. Those are definitely things that you need to learn through trusting the methodology and the process.
So, okay, you talked about the juxtaposition between time and money there. And I think that that's probably a foundational thing that hasn't changed over the years that you've been doing this. What has? Because obviously, you know, there's times where certain types of platforms or certain types of, and I guess, you know, this is a bigger question than the one that I'm asking here, but there's trends in consumer behavior or human behavior, right? And there's trends in the effectiveness of certain types of marketing channel use, search versus a social environment versus, well, frankly, you're mostly in the digital space, but online versus offline, right? Sure. We still live in a real world. Not everybody has, a computer or even a smartphone attached at their hip every moment of the day that they might be thinking about solving a problem that they have. What have you seen sort of changes over the time that you've been doing this?
I think one thing that has changed, perhaps devolved, is the website visitor's tendency to fill out a form and the hesitance to fill out a form. In other words, what I'm saying is conversion optimization has always been the glue to a digital marketing funnel, and conversion optimization continues to get more difficult as the years progress. An example would be many of the paid social channels, LinkedIn, Facebook, and for a time, Twitter or X, have evolved to lead gen forms. Google, in fact, has an ad unit as well called a lead gen form. There was a reason why they deployed these lead gen forms, because they realized over time, sending people from a click off of that platform to someone's website is disruptive by definition. I was just searching for something, or I was just scrolling in a feed, and now you want me to get off of this experience and fill out an invasive form to give you my information? Hence the deployment of lead gen forms in the first place. So that same logic continues to grow. Even with lead gen forms, it's become slightly more difficult to get people to be okay giving you their information. And especially if you're asking for core information like a phone number or something to that effect, or perhaps what if I, as a persona, for example, say I'm a chief technical officer, maybe I'm, with respect, anti-marketing. I don't want you to have my information. Thank you very much. I'd like to browse as I see fit. So how am I to generate ROI as the marketer responsible for converting those types of personas? And so the information is the second thing that has evolved. The back-end information, the ability to track the visitors without submissions, the ability to understand who specifically has visited my site, who has been influenced by my impressions. You know, those types of things are core to B2B marketing, which I have found to be the main place that I play with my agency, IXL. And it's really just a matter of learning how to continue to drive ROI or validate the efforts that we're doing, while also running into the fire of a tough conversion user behavior.
So, okay, we're talking a little bit about information gathering, and there's we're at this moment in time in early 2024 when we're recording this, where Google is finally doing something that they've been talking about doing for quite a while with regard to the data that they have loaned to us as advertisers, and other platforms have been going through a similar transition. And what I'm talking about is really going to impact businesses more and more by the end of this year with Google and with other platforms more. And I wonder if you might talk a little bit about, because I'm not an expert in this area as much as you are, what's happening here and what the lesson is for businesses that have been sort of relying on what's known as third-party data from these different platforms, what they need to be shifting into. And quite frankly, I think based on what I've heard you've been talking about, why they're going to benefit from this shift. That's presumptive, I guess, that last little part. But
well, I what you're referring to is, just to give a visual to those that are listening, when you visit a website and there's this banner on the top or bottom that explicitly outlines, we would like to track your data. Will you allow these cookies to track you? And there's an allow button versus a disallow button, for lack of a better term. Similarly to the user behavior I'm mentioning, where people just don't want to fill out forms, if I am given a choice there, I'm going to say disallow. And that is something that has happened to, directionally, I would say 90%+ of all tracking. And so to answer your question, there need to be other ways to resolve that tracking. Some mobile options exist in terms of actually having device IDs, such that even if you visit my site and you say no, I can still somehow attribute your specific phone and therefore categorize you. There are also very robust databases that are not cheap to have access to, that have already done a lot of this hard work to quantify and collect user information. And then they have essentially the concept of a match, right? A match ID between data that I have for this particular visitor, even with an opt-out like behavior, and some sort of match to this master database. There are databases that exist that are both B2C and B2B in nature. I'm not talking about the Zoom Infos, the Apollos, the Sales Intels of the world. I'm speaking to master databases that have 250 million line items. That is a robust SQL query to find an entire market. To be able to match visitor data versus a database of that type is a way that you can, in 2024 and beyond, still figure out who visited my website or who did that action but didn't necessarily give me their information. And I would just say, directionally, any idea that will come is most likely going to be going into that same fire of, I no longer can trace this person, so I have to get creative with robust technologies that will allow me to still track this person. Certain things will never go out of style. The concept of a retargeting audience. If you visit my site, though I may not know specifically who you are, I know that you represent a person amongst a larger grouping that has visited my website, and therefore I can still trace you in certain ways. Not specifically you individually, David Bayer, but someone who visited my website from a marketing campaign that you were a part of.
The way that you're talking about it, I think most of us have been acknowledging this for a while, feels really invasive from the point of view of the person who is being tracked, but is a hugely powerful shift that we've sort of embraced and gotten used to as marketers and businesses and advertisers that, you know, so I just want to call out that the terminology may not feel very comfortable, but it's sort of the way that we've operated. The point that I wanted to ask you about was the shift from this third party data and resources to the idea of owning as much of this data as possible. And maybe, you know, go back to the idea that you were raising earlier about the forms. Well, there's ways to get more forms filled out than less. One of which, this is something that you know, we work with our agency clients who are working through this process with a business, and you know, take two different ends of the spectrum. You take an opt-in form on a website that asks one question: what's your email address? Doesn't ask for a name, doesn't ask for a phone number, doesn't ask for anything else except an email address. The other end of the spectrum is, you know, B2B sites that are giving away a white paper after they've asked you about, you know, who you are, what company you work for, what your role is in the company, how many employees, what's the budget for this, that, and the other thing, and other validation things, presumably to make sure that either it's you know, customized in its response, or it is weeding out those who they don't want to be clogging up their system, right? So there is one way to kind of be able to manage the data internally at your own. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, because this is the space you play in.
Sure. Yeah, you're speaking to my heart, David, with even this line of questioning. So obviously it behooves me and any of my peers in the digital marketing space to get as many submissions as possible. Less is more. So yes, at its bare bones, a single field email only is, or let's say if you have mobile marketing aspirations, a single field that says, give me your phone number, same concept, is definitely the easiest way to get a conversion. Usually you would, in fact, enhance that data with a third-party database, such that if I know your email address is, you know, johndoe@company.com, I can discover more about you, first name John, last name Doe, company details, et cetera, based on domain. So there's a lot you can extract just from that field. I would argue that the best way to extract data is, once I've acquired someone, to then email nurture that person with either a progressive data acquisition process or utilizing other touch points to continue to accrue more data, even if you're not filling out a form. So if you're not part of an email drip campaign and you've opened emails 1, 2, and 3, I now know that you have demonstrated interest in my product and or brand, and I might segment you differently. You might be warranted to get an email that says, "Hey, we'd love to call you. We see you're interested in our stuff." Or you can see that someone is representing certain IP address regions, et cetera, and then segment them regionally. So there are ways to extract data without, let's say, literally extracting data from the user providing it. I'm a big fan of email nurturing, email segmentation, and speaking to people with the right message at the right time with the right context, whether you've given me that context or whether I've been able to extrapolate it through some of these means.
Give an example of that last piece, because I'm really interested in the idea of the right context. I think is a powerful idea that not too many folks understand. But and the fact that you can create that based on some behavior or some information that was presented directly from the prospect, those that's an interesting concept. But what do you mean by context in the first place?
Sure. So I'll give the example of my agency, IXL. Let's say someone found their way to my site through some sort of means. Could be Google search, could be direct traffic because they heard this very podcast. And you're now on my site. I have different pages that reflect different verticals that we've worked on. I can understand through Google Analytics, time on page, interest on page. I can create retargeting audiences based on people who have visited certain pages. I can actually see if you're interested in my prices and or my verticals and or my case studies. And so imagine utilizing that information to put you in segments, audience groupings, buckets in my CRM database to then have an automated email experience after you give me your email address to want to speak to us. Let's say that you visited those pages, but you did not give me your email information. I might have a partnership with a database of 250 million users that allows me to understand that John Doe at company.com visited me, so he or she did not present their email address to me. And I might operationalize my sales team to follow up with John Doe, indicating, "Hey, I see that you came to the site and were interested. Can we talk?" And that is now creating automation, be it through email or phone, even though you did not present your phone number or email to me. And I can still reference the fact that you looked at a particular vertical page, or I think that you might have interest in this vertical. We looked into your site and we understand X and Y and Z about you. Would you like to talk? So there are ways to be smart with your marketing follow-ups and prospecting while having as little information as possible, so long as you're accounting for things like segmentation and proper tactics based on what you have or don't have.
But what you just laid out there is impressive because of what the technology allows us to do these days that didn't exist, 20 plus years ago. We didn't have the marketing automation capabilities. We didn't have the tracking capabilities. We certainly did segment, but not in as sophisticated a manner as you've just described. And I'm certain that businesses that, have some tools on hand, whether they're using, Keap or Pardot or Marketo or HubSpot or any maybe less sophisticated tool than that category, and I know all of you Go High Level folks out there yelling at me, "What about Go High Level?" So I'll mention that as well, right? But all of these tools have the capability to build the tracking and the follow-up systems. As long as you know what you have to be looking for and thinking about in terms of the intent of the business to direct or funnel somebody in a certain place, how do you work through building or building toward systematizing all of that?
Yeah, well, some of it has to do with experience, frankly, right? So someone like yourself, David, someone like myself, who has been through these ropes with many different clients, you've learned what works and what doesn't work. So there is some of that. And obviously, if a client were to have a desire to have a very mature segmentation of this type, it behooves you to go to an expert. Now, that said, what types of things work from a segmentation standpoint? I would say reverse engineer yourself as if you were a consumer, right? I buy a product or I visit a website. Do I expect a receipt from my product purchase? Of course I do, right? So that means that I will receive an email in my inbox reflecting specific information about my purchase. What about the bottom of that email? Isn't there enough real estate or room to continue to market to me? What if I showed interest in a particular product? Would you like to recommend secondary, tertiary products that are related, add-ons, et cetera? And what if I give you my email information, period, no matter the why, but you now have it? I'm now into your world. I've entered your domain. Educate me. Tell me more about yourself. Tell me why your brand will help me solve my problems, will help change my life, will help save me time, money, energy. Those would be wise things to do in an email experience once you now have my email. Separate from that, you can use either the visit itself from a tracking perspective or the email address itself to retarget me through advertising. I'll give you one anecdote. So I'm a hip hop generation guy. I love my sneakers. There's plenty of sneakerheads more sneaker headed than I am, but I like my sneakers.
The Nike headquarters is right down the road here. So I know of what you speak. Yes.
Exactly right. So I'm a big Nike fan. And so I shop on a website, no solicitation, I have no association, called StockX. And StockX has really impressed me with their retargeting ads. Why? Because they actually demonstrate in their advertising the specific sneakers that I had been browsing. Further, they have a motion-like retargeting display ad versus a static display ad, which allows me to really have a interactive experience as I'm visiting, let's say, CNN.com, ESPN.com, having nothing to do with the sneaker site. And it, of course, does what it's supposed to do. It reminds me, oh yeah, I was looking at those Jordan ones. That's right. And perhaps it wasn't the right timing, which is why I left the website. And so this is something that isn't so much new, but it's about the execution of how you do this. Are you just bothering me with your high frequency static imagery that is not specific to my visitor experience? Or do you have an appropriate frequency? And boy, is this captivating, so captivating that I'm referencing it on a podcast with David Bayer, right? So I think the execution and the how matters here.
You use the phrase in your communication with me before we decided to do the podcast episode about having an experimental yet purposeful approach. And I think that's very much what you just described there in terms of testing and finding whether different channels are, and we haven't really talked about the testing and you know, acting on what you learn as much, but the purposeful approach of trying this, seeing if you're getting the traction and what are you measuring, the increase in engagement, the increase in ultimately sales, because that's what we're all, you know, businesses are in place for in the first place. So I think, you know, we're digging deeper into a subject that I really, as I can tell you do, I enjoy exploring because it's fascinating to understand the possibilities. How does a business know that this kind of marketing investment is the right one for them. Like, it's the right time for them to be looking into this level of sophistication.
Sure. Well, I'll give an example of a B2B funnel and speak through the lens of LinkedIn advertising. So let's say that I have a B2B SaaS product and I have some traction in certain directions, but nothing that is mathematically solidified. And the answer I seek is perhaps for my investors, perhaps for sales purposes, which vertical is best? I also want to understand, I have my marketing department giving me many different ideas. I might like some, dislike some, but rather than being overly biased on what I like versus don't like, I'd like to learn which particular ad campaign or image works best. And so those are two variables, target and creative. And I often set up with my clients, call it multivariate testing, right? So I'm trying target one with creative one, target one with creative two, target one with creative three, and then obviously target two with creative one, two, three, etc. And let's say you are now deploying three permutations on each side. I may have nine campaigns running at the same time with a multi-purpose effort here. One, of course, I want some engagement and conversions, who doesn't, and sales. But while I'm going down that path, let's learn which target has the highest click-through rate, the highest submission rate. Let's learn which creative has the highest click-through rate and submission rate. And suddenly, you're going to see trends while also getting, obviously, the goal of getting clicks, engagement, and eventually conversions. So it's, for lack of a better term, kill two birds with one stone, right? I'm learning and I'm purposefully marketing. And in an emotionless way, I want to see what worked and what didn't work. And imagine I have clear learnings that, let's just say, target two was the best out of the targets and creative one was the best out of the targets. I now refine my approach by solely focusing on target two and creative one, and I increase the budget there and turn down or off the budget for the other permutations. Sounds simple as I describe it, but it is a methodology that you really need to remove opinions, remove emotions, and that's what it means to truly be data-driven. And I had found, again, getting back to my initial roots here, I had found a passion in that. I had been a little bit disheartened starting my marketing career, experiencing so many opinions and finding that some I might agree with or disagree with, but that was less the point. What's the right answer? Whether it's my answer or your answer, my ego does not need to lead this conversation. I want to know what the right answer is. And often people with more experience during my early career would simply be able to have more weight in that room. Whereas I might think, not to sound vain, that my particular idea is better, but I'm also not resigned to it. I'd like to learn if I'm right or wrong, wouldn't you? And so as a result, that's what really had me think emotionless about this process. And I found passion in sharing those answers, whether I'm right or wrong. And my clients have appreciated that, frankly, and that's what has led me to this career today.
I love it. And I love the passion around finding the right answer through a methodology, through a systematic approach, being the thing that you really appreciate so much about what you do, rather than which creative looks, you know, the most exciting or engaging to you. And I would say that for, you know, businesses that are in the B2B space, which is where you tend to specialize, or others who are just curious, what else can Chris help me uncover or work through with me? Where can they find you?
Well, my website is easy to recall, IEXCEL.co, to be clear, not.com. And, you know, we take pride in generating ROI for our clients. We're passionate about digital marketing. I hope that comes across in this very conversation here. We love the craft. I've surrounded myself with a strong team of people who think similarly and are passionate about getting the right answer. So that's what we represent on the market. And I'd be honored to have any chats. If anyone would like to chat, you just have to find us at our website, IXL.co/chat.
Excellent. Well, Chris Rodriguez, this has been awesome. You've taught me a thing or two about things that I always think I know. And then I get guests like you who sort of, you know, pull the doors open a little bit wider. And I realize, oh, there's even more to it that I get to explore. And you did a great job of that today. So thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Very humbling. I appreciate the invite and looking forward to many more chats to come, David.
Indeed. Folks, you have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who could benefit from listening to the episode you just heard, please send them our way. Until the next time, my name is David Baer. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.